crew of 7 others, total of 8, right?
What?
And Dr. Gerstmann's crew, total of 8?
The Kostama crew.
Yeah.
Kostama?
Mm-hmm.
How do you spell that?
K-A-S-T-A-M-A.
Yeah. And yeah. Anyway, they made a successful summit climb, but they had waited up at 17,000 feet for the winds for 4 or 5 days, and then the wind subsided, and they went through Denali Pass and on up the west approach and past the Archdeacon's Tower and up the west route. And coming down at 19.5, who should they meet but the 3 of the Machiko Sakita expedition. And at this time, the storm warnings were out and the big lenticular standing wave clouds were multiple caps of the mountain, and the snow was blowing and the wind was picking up 30, 40 miles an hour, and wild and squirrely. So Dr. Gerstmann tried to talk to the 3 little Japanese Chico Sakita crew and tell them that there's a terrible storm coming, but they wouldn't take no, yes, or maybe for an answer. They just took off up for the mountain, and they did leave a marker on top of it, too.
I wonder if they understood.
Well, they're all those Japanese are really pretty proficient in English.
Well, I know, but I mean,
the Chico was the only one that could speak English.
Well, no, but
that's a thing to think about. I mean,
well, right.
Of course, you could say, you could point and frown and
true.
Say, don't go.
And
of course, they got their own ideas.
Yeah. Sure, they was going to climb it or else.
We're almost there.
Right, only 500, 600 feet to go. And they was going to make it or else. And that took just enough time to lock into the terrible winds on the way down. And they decided they would take a shortcut, maybe, instead of the southwest buttress, the Breitenbach route, they would come down from Hilton Horn direct. And that was a mistake because the terrible winds and the chill factors and numb hands, fingers, and my
what time of day down was it? Was it good light when they started down? Was it dark?
Well, it's mostly the cold reality.
Well, I know, but I mean, you know, was it? Was
I don't know. I don't think Gerstmann said what time of the day it was, but irregardless, when the storm hits, it turns dark anyway.
Well, now, when they got up there, they planted their expedition flag and took off right down.
Well, they came back down instead, and they knew that they was in some trouble,
right.
Apparently, because they could see the 14,300-foot camp, and they tried to go straight down the side of the mountain.
Ah, they could see your strip at 14,300.
Well, they could see some tents down there.
Well, who was there?
Oh, I had 5 or 6 crews
on the
mountain. And they leaked caches and orange tents, and so they thought they could get to the shelter of the tents rather than to go back down this perilous Breitenbach Ridge, the southwest approach. So that's what happened.
So in other words,
it was
going
to take a shortcut, and it's so darn steep. Sedan's skied down this avalanche chute right next to the one they fell, and it's just steep.
Yeah.
It's so steep you could almost jump it with a parachute.
Well, how did they? They must have really been panicky if they figured they could get.
Well, but you get your mind paralyzed with altitude and your hands so cold and just chilled to the bone. And they had 1 day's food and no sleeping bags and light climbing gear. And boy, that 30, 40 mile an hour wind, maybe 70, 80 miles an hour, hit them at maybe 0 or 10 below. And it.
They fell again now, so it's on the tape, from 19,000?
Well, I don't know, but apparently because they was pretty well.
Remember,
they fell to 14,400 then?
No, they
15,300. 15,300, they were 1,000 foot above above your strip when they quit.
Some seracs right up above the 14,300 turnaround.
A good guess would be that they fell and they were 4,000.
Yeah, I think so.
And remember, Gerstmann was appalled that they didn't have their sleeping.
Yeah, because you never go any place without your sleeping bag. This Gerstmann, how many times? 6 times he tried to climb with him, and finally made her.
They didn't have any tents, nothing.
No.
Well, down on the Breitenbach Ridge at 16,000, they had a camp.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they didn't take anything with them. So.
No, it must have been a wild wind, because they're at 19. they have the choice of going 3,000 or 5,000 on a direct drop. They chose the 5,000 foot straight down. So that's what we got. Well, you just get so cold and so petrified with altitude sickness. Maybe they were.
Well, that's good. That's a good part. I've got a lot of dope on this. Okay. Got newspaper accounts, all the stuff you've given me, I'll have what Janae gives me, and
it'll be good.
Let's see. Packing up.
Yeah. She's not a lawnsman.
I didn't know where it came from. I thought I made the word up. But there was right on that sausage.
This is the balance here.
Yeah. Well, Teray was going to quit climbing then, eh?
You haven't got it on yet.
Yeah, it's on. He was going to hang her up.
Why don't you let Joe finish?
Oh, sure. All right.
Yeah. You don't want to smack your lips for the recording? Or
I wasn't going to hurt anything.
He swallowed the question.
Well, that must have been a beauty.
Okay. Because that's in the book. You know, that's in the book.
Yes, and he also said something that wasn't true in the book.
There's a few bullshit lines.
Oh, no, sure. Well, you know, there isn't every book.
About me going to the bathroom using my fingers or something.
Right? In his bag.
Because I didn't go for 5 days, and that's why I got a little
that's
sick.
That's why he was sick.
I felt fine after. You don't go to the bathroom for 5-6 days, and you're going to feel a little woozy. Oh. Yeah.
But how long would they have laid in there without, you went out for what, food?
No, I just went out for the gas.
Gas, that's right.
I went out for food, too. Then everybody comes with it.
Well, like I say, I didn't editorialize the point where I said I didn't think there's a right or anything like that.
The one part
but I just
well, it was wrong though, but is you made me out as if, you know, I just came from a city or some damn where or that I'd never been in a mountain.
Yeah, right, you know? That's bothered me too, because I knew you'd climb before that.
You know, I have never been a peak bagger, I have to climb this mountain because so-and-so thinking about doing it. I have to climb it. It's the first ascent.
Yeah.
I've never been a member of an expedition. But heck, I grew up at 6,500 feet. My father had a hunting chalet up there, and I lived up there for years and years. And heck, I was up there all the time, and I was sort of a... I kept pretty much to myself, and before school, hell, I'd run up in the mountains, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning or so, hunting snakes, and of course, every year I'd go hunting with my father went hunting, and so it's more the,
that was your home?
Not the technical climbing, but just climbing, and I was in real good shape.
Yeah, right.
I did an awful lot of running, and I never belonged to mountaineering club of some sort, you know, and that sort of thing, you know.
Fraternity.
Yeah, right. So, well, that's what I say, and you know, it was obvious that he didn't like it, you know, and I just
but you get your ability from just doing things that you like to do when you're a kid,
right. But he couldn't, Batkeen, did he come with you?
Well, he was here with Terry in 64.
So did he stay here then?
No.
You knew him before that, didn't you?
Not before 64.
Oh.
60, you met him then.
I met him in 64, and he had said he would like to come back, so I saw him when I went over there. Winter 65, 66, I saw him in Paris, and you know, he was saying he would like to come back, and so in 66, I sent him a ticket to come over, and that's the way, and we were
with this purpose in mind?
With the winter climbing, or just to come over?
No, just to go over. I just heard about the climb. We climbed a little peak down in Alaska, down Cold Peak or something. Uh-huh. And Grace Holman was in it, and another guy, and Farina and me. And then she just happened to mention something about
Grace
winter climb. And that's where, you know, Yeah. I'm usually like that. Again, I hear something I'm interested in, I start working on it.
How, by the way, how did she spell her middle name, Ray?
Grace?
Yeah.
Middle name?
Jansen. Or her maiden name.
Oh, maiden name.
Yeah.
J-A-N-S-E-N. That's pretty much like the...
Well, J-A-N-S-E-N? Now, here's another one. This is what Sheldon's always talking about.
I asked Dr. Wickman about it. He would know.
Well, Sheldon's always talking about Grace Jansen Holman.
Well, Holman is...
Right, I know. That's Vin Holman's chief. That was her husband.
Yeah.
But, and her maiden name obviously was, I misspoke myself, not middle name, but her maiden name was Jansen. Or Johnson. But what
Jansen.
Is it? Jansen. It's not Jensen. Jansen.
But you could, if you talk to Wickman,
then... He's still at the university.
Pardon me?
We probably have
Dr.
some
Wick.
Correspondence
yeah.
from her, don't we?
Yeah,
Holman?
Look over.
Well, look at... Well, let's...
It wouldn't be on the Jansen.
What about that? What about that deal, Ray, where you went up for that military airplane, though? Basically, I've got Sheldon's...
You got this thing on?
Yeah, it? It's on.
Okay.
I got Sheldon's, recap of the thing. Now, I know he wasn't involved at all, except that
he was involved, made
the arrangements with Blair.
Yeah, Blair came through here, and then
right.
Sheldon...
But, I mean, Sheldon didn't do any of the flying or anything like that.
Then I suggested that we go and pick up Dave Johnson. So we went over there and picked him up.
And he was here at Talkeetna?
No, he was at Crossway.
Where?
He was building his cabin across the river. He's
oh,
near
I
the
see.
Bridge over there.
Oh,
bridge.
I see.
And at the time I was living out in a cabin near the
is
road.
Is he still around?
Oh, yeah, he's still living there.
Oh.
I go, when I go into my place, I go partly on his road and then I go north.
Oh, I see. So you got him.
Yeah, and then we, I think we had some bad weather flying in for a while there, and we couldn't get in, and finally we got in. Actually, we didn't really, what I wanted to do, I wanted to, for the aircraft, for the chopper to hover right on top of the crash area, so we could just,
yeah.
you know, we could rappel down or go,
yeah.
go down the cable, whatever.
In other words, above the lip, above the...
Well,
or right over
the aircraft was our, had crashed at around 14.5, and we wound up landing. They wound up landing us at 13,000. Could have been, you know, I would originally I wanted to hover right there and then get down.
Could you have done that? Do you think?
Hover? Yeah. Well, they said that they were worried about it in the beginning, but in the end, like a couple of 3 weeks later. We wound up doing the same thing, you know.
It was pretty windy, though.
Except that by that time, you know, a
yeah.
lot of things had happened.
Yeah.
I had to reach the aircraft already.
Yeah.
We just happened to hover there to pick up some other gear.
Yeah.
Some of the aircraft, you know, seats and stuff. But what happened, we came back out because the weather was bad.
Then Johnson's wife was going to have a baby.
Yeah, so... You know, they weren't too crazy about
yeah.
him leaving then again, so Rex Post, he was just coming up here, he was the captain.
Well, now listen, let me tell you how Sheldon describes this now. He said in a coincidental conversation with Post, who was in Seattle, that he mentioned what had happened, mm-hmm. and that you were looking for an anchorman. He said, you know, and in fact, great, I'd like to do it and I'll come up. And he was he's a mountaineer. In other words, Post had
flown
before.
Yeah, he had been in McKinley.
He's a Pan Am captain.
He's
a captain of Pan Am. How old was Post? You know?
He was pretty close. I think he was pretty much the same as me.
I can find out.
35, 37.
Yeah, well, I'm 42 now.
So in other words, if I said he was in his late 30s, that would be accurate.
I think so.
Yeah. And so he said, I'll come up. He switched his flights. He was a senior captain or something like that.
No, he was, well, he was a co-pilot on the 747, which is, you know, they take the top captains for pilots. He was co-pilot.
Don't fly a red sheet though, it's a captain, chief and captain. I'll just put down he was a
Well, maybe he would have rated he might have rated captain on another aircraft. But the 747, they were just starting them off and they would take only the oldest captains. Sure. And then he probably made as much money as the captain of 707.
So in other words, then he came up to Anchorage. You met him in Anchorage, right?
Yeah, I picked him up.
Brought his gear with him, and you, in short, went over, got on a helicopter, and headed back up there.
He landed back at 13,000.
Then what happened?
We promptly started having real bad weather, so we were stuck right there. And then
how long were you hung in the weather before you started climbing?
I think it was about 3 days we stayed there at 13. I'm not sure. I think 3 days and a couple of surveys.
Yeah.
Then we went on up. We went actually above the side of the aircraft because we had to sort of go on up, bypass some crevasses and stuff. And then we'd have gone back down. And we dug a cave and we actually went to a cave that Dave Johnson and I had.
Oh, nice.
We had
Well, you had set some fixed light. You and Dave Johnson, didn't you?
No, it's not that sort of a climb. It's not.
Well, Sheldon phrased it fixed line, that you had set some fixed line and then had to quit because of the weather. And then, oh, no. I think he said that you and Post had set some line of some kind.
No, it's not a dangerous climb, you know.
Put that down.
Mainly crevasses, you know.
It's a lot of rain.
And the weather was the problem. Then I was going to go towards the actually in the evening it cleared. That one evening it cleared and I went and I saw the aircraft. Because it was sort of around the hill on the other side and we didn't really know exactly where it was. So I spotted it and I decided we were going to go there in the morning. So in the morning I said, well, I'm going to go over there. Post said he wasn't feeling too hot and so forth, you know, but he wasn't showing any signs really that. And anyway, I started worrying, and instead of going to the aircraft, trying to get to the aircraft, I thought maybe we better start going down. And we had bad. Then we started having bad weather again. The weather started closing.
This was before you went down.
Yeah.
The weather
well,
closed in.
I stopped getting him up, but
dressed and stuff. Mm-hmm.
He must have really gotten sick during the night. Then.
No, it's really in seekers.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you had to get him dressed.
No.
He just said.
Stay nice.
Yeah, right. That's what I was going to say. Oh, okay. But got him up. You know, you said, well, we're going to go down.
Because by that time it was the weather was closing in again.
Yeah, right. And at this point you were a little above the level of the wreck in a snow cave that you and Johnson had done.
Yeah.
And he got sick in the morning, in other words.
Above it?
Yeah, laterally a little above it.
You were around 15,000.
So then did you take him down then?
No. He just couldn't make it. And, you know, and before that, I started giving him diuretics. Somehow, I didn't act fast enough.
What kind of what do you give for a diuretic?
LA6.
LA6?
Lasix.
Lasix, how do you spell it?
L-A-S-S-I-X. So it's fillers of mine. Makes you pee.
And he couldn't or wouldn't, and
I couldn't.
How much time elapsed from the time he woke up in the morning and said, hey, I don't feel very good, until he actually...
Well, he was the type, he would never, he probably, chances are he probably didn't feel good before, but he was sort of an aero type, you know, he would never complain.
Did you notice that he looked bad or what?
Well, no, he wouldn't be able to see anything.
Well, I know, but how did you, I think...
Thinking back, you know, you're going to come up with danger signs, you know, and of course,
each
instance, you know, you learn more and more, and over the years, I've seen so many cases in McKinley. Where you, many of the cases are different, but you're getting to look for danger signs. Looking back, maybe you'd say, well, if a guy is very alert and completely self-sufficient at all times, he has never any problem tying his compounds or so. Very quick with his fingers, and all at once he seems to be fumbling a little bit. And so those would be now.
He forgets to do certain things, you know.
Yeah,
like,
if all at once he's acting a little clumsy, just, like, know, some people do all the time.
Yeah.
You know? But for that particular guy, then that would be a thing that you'd really have to notice. And this is now, you know. The reason I wasn't worried about him is because he'd been with me on McKinley in 69, and he was extremely strong.
No sickness,
no problem.
Huh?
He was the strongest member of the expedition.
When did this crash occur?
Well, I don't know. I don't have the dates, except why don't you take that?
The reason I ask is I think Sheldon said 67.
The crash? On Sanford? Oh no, that was in 70. I'll take the citation down. The citation, the medal there. It's on the right.
Would you guys object if I indulge myself in a cigarette?
Go ahead.
No need of you.
You'll ruin my lungs for life.
You can rest up between now and next spring.
But I want to work the place up there.
I got to lose about 40 pounds.
I'm going to run a homestead up there. Anyway.
Oh, yeah?
Live off the land.
Yeah. What are these cans?
The economy is going to crash anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We might be out there with you. Hey, can I use one of these cans here for an extra
week? Yeah, go ahead. Blow yourself up. One of them contains ammonia. Oh, this one's all right.
Yeah. So 70, you think that happened, eh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeez. Here's the date, though.
Gee, that's pretty, eh? Yeah, that's prettier than any of Sheldon's. I don't want to tell him that.
Right out of his tree.
14-8. February 1971.
71
was it? Well, it was a National Guard aircraft.
Oh, yeah, 71. That's right.
I think that's the way I've got it written.
Yeah,
National Guard aircraft crashed at 14,850.
What do you think about 70?
It was 71.
Early 70.
Reached the scene of the crash on the 30th of March, 1971. Okay. I suppose all of these photos that you took, Ray, those are all classified.
Well, we don't have any. I didn't even have a camera there. They gave me a camera.
Well, that's what I say. I mean,
so
the pictures you took
the
were all for
the pictures
military.
And everything.
child who saw the car.
Presented by Major General James F. Hollingsworth.
Your army file had some stuff on it.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, I said this one was here.
Sure.
Well, that's all it needs. Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, yeah. So, it was, you discovered that he wasn't feeling well, one way or another.
Well, yeah. What happened then, trying to take him down, figured it wouldn't work, so put him back inside.
Well, you kept
and
him
inside.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you
put
start
him back
that?
In, but he collapsed then. So, you know, the exertion and liquid in the lungs.
He must have went quick.
Real fast, boy.
How long would you say between the time?
Well, you would actually figure the bad part in that case would have been you landed at 13,000.
Yeah, right.
So no acclimatization.
Right, right. But I thought of that when I wrote it. You know, I thought, do you hear this guy coming in from Seattle? Right up on 13,000
feet.
Yeah,
you know, you should be able to do that when you climb along.
Well, yeah. But was he climbing that much? You know.
He was always, you know, sending postcards from Mount Cole. Well, anyway, you know, it's one thing without altitude sickness, you never...
Yeah.
You can't make fast holes, you know. It's,
no, right.
You can't
different
with
everybody, I imagine.
Every case is different.
Well, about how many, what would you just a guess on time between the time that you first noticed that he was definitely not right until he actually passed away?
Well, maybe
so then, there
they
you were.
Come to again, you know. Yeah. You have an artificial respiration.
Why? Well, now the way Sheldon
at that time, you see, at
yeah.
that time, the weather was bad. There was no way to get an aircraft in there.
Right.
The weather had been right during that
nice.
Case.
You had a radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
so then you just had to sit there, and for how long did you have to wait?
The aircraft came about, then the weather cleared again.
That
were
night?
Were able to get an aircraft in there.
Next morning, did he come back at night?
He came in the
night.
Dark.
Is that right? They landed up there in the dark. They didn't land. They
hovered.
In the dark.
Wow.
Did
of course they got floodlights on those.
Yeah.
And then you went back again to the aircraft? Later? Yeah.
Yeah, he went in alone then.
Yeah, that's right.
I think I came out.
Took you 10 days, he claimed.
A couple of days later, I came back.
Well, he claimed it took 10 days for you to talk to the military and let's go up there alone.
I don't know. No, it wasn't ever any question there.
Well, Don thought that there was, what's the guy's
you
name?
You had some bad weather.
Blair. Didn't want you to go back up because of what had happened, you know.
Yeah, well, it was pretty much up to General Hollingsworth.
And he said, go.
Colonel Azell.
Yeah.
Was at that time Colonel Azell was assistant chief of staff.
Yeah. You didn't have to sign any release or anything?
Oh, you always do when you go on army aircraft anyway. At the time
yeah.
I wasn't
yeah.
working for the army.
Yeah. So you went back up alone and climbed up.
Well, I didn't feel like taking somebody who hadn't been up to.
Yeah, right. Now, what was the... There again, you know, I don't know how much of this is classified radio, you know, what you call it.
Nothing.
What was the scene like when you got there? And I'm not going to describe this in detail, you know, this is just... I get as many facts as I can, and then I pick out which ones of them will describe the thing in a summary form. That's
well,
all
you
I
saw that the aircraft had plowed into the ground, you know. I dug a cave right in front of the one engine, one at the same time clearing... Clearing the snow on the pop, and taking pictures of the pops. You know, they can usually tell
yeah, right.
quite a bit from that, whether the engine had been fed up or not, you know, and the engine was the pop
caught this trailing when it crashed. Dug on the bodies and took pictures of them.
Were they out in the snow or still in the aircraft?
There were two in the aircraft.
Ah.
One had been thrown in.
Oh, there were just three guys. Sheldon said five. Boy, am I glad I'm talking to you about this. See, this is what I say, you know. Like, when I write the thing, I say, well, the five-man crew... The five-man crew was killed on impact, see. Well, if it wasn't five men, I don't want to say it, see. That's why I ask you for these details, see, so I can get it right the first time around. Or the second time around.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff in there somewhere. Maybe.
So you took pictures of the instruments too, I imagine, inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the plane pretty badly beat up and all?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Was it a big plane or rare?
Well, I think it was a twin engine.
Sheldon had something on there. I don't even think I put the kind of plane it was in there. Now, did they get those guys out?
No, because at that time we couldn't find the third guy anymore. Because that snowed again. When they first took pictures, you could see the body there, but I couldn't find the body in the snow.
You found two of them?
Well, two were in the aircraft.
Oh, I see. You couldn't find them outside.
It was hard to tell exactly where he was.
Well, didn't they get any of them off?
No. Took some gear, all personal gear, you know.
Well, this is probably a stupid question, but if they could hover with a helicopter, how come they didn't get the body off?
Well, they didn't hover then. You know, when we came back, well, probably, because then we would have probably had to find the circle, you know, just pulling two guys out. That's probably,
Well, I wonder if they... I wonder if the military just wrote it off and said they couldn't find it.
Oh no, they I saw the pictures where they saw the
what?
Not sure the wrong body.
So they just left them up?
Mm-hmm.
Geez, that'd be kind of a tough deal, wouldn't you tell the survivors? You know?
Mm-hmm. No.
People are different. A lot of people want the bodies.
Yeah, right. I suppose. I don't think I would. I think if my boy, you know, got hung up on a mountain someplace and got killed, I think I'd assume he's in there. Providing the guy.
These are the three guys. Sergeant Alex, citizen of the
world. Yeah, I was going to say,
this is the guy who...
They're National Guard
people. Yeah. I don't know if they were all National Guard or not.
It was a National Guard airplane.
Yeah, the airplane.
I was a balance.
Yeah, his father lives in the Klutner village
down in Kapuzin.
I went to see him, he wanted to see me.
Huh. That's interesting. So, you came out and that was it.
Well, we went back in to get, and took some seats, or the seats that, you know, like we had.
Yeah.
So with the guy's knee, Sergeant Blair, he was sitting, he punched in that seat and catapulted the other guy out. The seats are shaped this way, and now they were shaped way this way. They landed with a tremendous force. All the pedals were twisted, you know, and they're short. You don't have much leverage. You know, everything was just twisted.
Yeah.
And one guy, you know, they were really...
Yeah, probably impacted.
Of course, when you...
Power, you know.
Anytime you have bodies in the mountain or so, the same with the Japanese girls, they don't really look that bad. Anytime a body is frozen, it's not the same as when you have... You have a body in the tropics.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, they never looked in this.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you have an open. in a gash, and the blood hasn't even stayed away.
Well, I wrote that up in there because I thought it was interesting, and it gave me a chance to introduce you, you know, in the book. You're in the book quite a bit, actually.
Well, not introduced.
Well, introduced from the standpoint of by, right, by an incident, show what your capabilities are.
Yeah, well, that's not the sort of guy. A friend of mine dies on me.
No, but you know what I mean, Ray.
Well,
I mean,
you know.
The thing is, what I'm trying to say is, you know, your name hadn't appeared in the book until 1966. You know, the book is like about three quarters volume then. And so I mentioned the fact that, well, in 1966, Don Sheldon met Ray Genet. And then I figured a good chance to put in something in there that relates to you, you know, and
so I wrote it up,
even though Sheldon didn't have anything to do with it, really, outside of contacting Blair.
Yeah. Well, Blair was flying through here.
You know, that's strange that they would take the seats out, but not the people.
Well, that was my, you know, I just took the seat down with some other gear and stuff, because I thought
it wouldn't have been that hard to get them out of the plane, would it? The
body. Yeah, it would have been a real job.
Yeah, but you got the seats out, big seats.
Not the one seat, but no, that was thrown out.
Yeah, he was talking about one that was thrown out. The guy that was thrown out and was catapulted out.
The seat was on the airplane?
Yeah, I think that one was out. That's the one that in the corner.
The guy that was in the snow.
Oh, yeah, everything got torn loose, you know, you crash in an airplane, you got your seat belts on, that's something different, you know,
Well, the impact, you figure, what would they be doing, 120, 130 maybe? Right into the side of a mountain? Man. Well, listen, what about Michiko Sakita? I've got a couple of tape segments that Don gave me about the, you know, the climb and his part. And he pretty well described what they were doing up there, how many there were, and so forth. And I'll research their names in the newspaper and so forth and get all of that. But what I was interested in mainly is what your part of it was, a description of
what I know of it, there were five.
Yeah, there was five total.
Five girls and
three.
Michiko Sakita was the leader.
Right. But what about your part in it? In other words, assume that we've got...
I was on an army expedition. I was leading an army team. And we knew when we were on the mountain that that maybe been a problem up there, but we were really on the wrong side from what we thought. Because they were supposed to have climbed... West Ridge, starting in the northwest, and then northeast fork. You don't know what you're looking for. So, and everybody had been looking for the girls, and they were missing by
the parties up there had been, but no search parties.
You know, everybody in airplanes, you know, they had been flying around.
Yeah, they chartered a helicopter. Japanese council chartered a helicopter, I guess.
No.
Well, that was when they actually went and got them.
Sheldon was
found
the
them.
Only one who was really looking for them.
So it was, you know.
For a couple weeks.
It didn't
week
really look
two.
Like anybody was really.
It was dumb, kind of.
I don't know. But anyway.
Well, he said something about the Japanese consulate.
Well, that was
later. Chartering a helicopter. When did that happen?
Well, let's
that was later. Okay.
When I came down with the army team, came back into Talkeetna, there was Michiko Sakita and the husband of one of the girls. They were here and they started coming around and asking questions and this and that, and they started. You know, they seemed sort of lost and didn't really know what to do.
They were asking you questions.
Yeah. In the meantime, I had another team, Titus had arranged for the other team to leave, you know, somebody else guiding them in the meantime till I could join them. Mm-hmm. And they were going up the mountain. And I didn't really, so I didn't really have time to do too much. I figured I had to join another expedition.
Right.
So I thought, well, heck, best way, you know, is to really look with a helicopter. What's the use of going somewhere? I called the Japanese consulate and I suggested, you know, I asked them if they would pay for a helicopter, because I didn't know, you know, at that time nobody really figured it was a rescue anymore. So army aircraft stay out of it, you know.
They had given up on army.
I don't really know what happened.
Army, nobody ever did anything.
The Rescue Coordination Center is run by the Air Force. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
But the Air Force doesn't really have any high altitude aircraft as far as helicopters is concerned. Hmm. Their limit is 14,000 feet. Hmm. And they don't even, some of those helicopters don't function that well at 14. Whereas the Army has helicopters that can fly, that can land at 16,000
feet. Is that right?
You know, and they
can't you think the Air Force would be the most likely to have the higher performance aircraft, wouldn't it? You know.
Well, not in helicopters necessarily. You know, they're not concerned with transporting troops.
Yeah, I suppose.
And
so you saw Watanabe.
So I figured the best thing is to just get a pirate helicopter. I mean, I was working for the Army then, you know, but since they weren't running a search anymore, they have to get their own orders from the Rescue Coordination Center.
Right.
They have to be asked to do that. Mm-hmm. It's always a big to-do, trying to really get something done. You have to deal with a million people.
Yeah, red tape.
It's a big bureaucracy like every other public servant organization. Nobody really wants to take responsibility for doing anything, so I didn't have any time.
Yeah, right.
So I told them, they said, well, I told the Japanese consul what would be the best way to go about it, that Ms. Sekita wanted somebody to help, and that I would be willing to go up there and look with a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
They thought of it, and they said, well, we have a Japanese team coming from Japan, a climbing team, and they,
Especially for the search.
Is
that right?
Yeah.
That they would be coming over here, and I said, well, it doesn't make too much sense, because unless they really know where they're going to go, you know, it's much easier to just have a look.
Sure.
You know, if you want to send them over here later on, if you don't find anything, fine. So they agreed. I think they set a limit of, since a jet helicopter runs about $340 an hour. So I think they set a limit of 7 hours of search.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you remember who they chartered the helicopter with?
Well, no, I called the helicopter. I arranged for the helicopter.
Who is helicopter?
They didn't charter the helicopter, they paid the bill.
Yeah, right.
Who was
chartered?
It was one that was run by Gay.
Oh, Ward Gay.
Well, not Ward
not
Gay,
Ward.
It was Border.
Oh,
at
I
the
see.
Time had a helicopter out.
Alouette or what?
It was an Alouette.
Jet. True.
Yes. And so we went in there. What was the name of the pilot again? The pilot had never been above 10,000, but,
That was another thing. There was trouble getting the pilot, wasn't it? One turned up sick or something. When
yeah,
found
we
out
were
about
supposed
the
to
assignment.
Go. And nobody was crazy about the deal.
At six
know.
Suddenly.
So the pilot we got, what the
Blankenship?
Something like
no,
that.
No, that's a doctor.
No, what was the name of the pilot?
Miss Fairbanks.
You should really check with Gay on that. So you can
we don't.
Anyway.
It's a problem enough. No, we don't really need it.
We started to search in the most likely area, but taking a wide swing on each side of the mountain anyway.
Well, Sheldon said he thought maybe they fell where Wilcox went off at first. But it turned out they were on the other side of the mountain.
Well,
Wilcox fell off the Archdeacon's Tower.
First we put some, well, he doesn't know that.
Well, that's what he assumes.
The two guys that were roped together that were down below Archdeacon's Tower, they were walking down.
Yeah.
They were taking a shortcut and the road wasn't wound up, and that's why they got rolled down. So they didn't wound that out. Now the other guys, nobody knows where they went.
Well, you'd assume they'd be with the other two, though, wouldn't you?
No.
How come?
Oh, you take off.
You mean those seven guys?
You can be separated in no time. If you have some guys that are really slow and you have two other guys on the road, you can be miles apart in no time.
Sheldon claimed the wind blew him right off the mountain. He don't know, obviously. This is his opinion. He figures that they were probably together, but he don't know, obviously. And
there's
that the
no
wind
idea
was
knowing.
A tremendous storm, and it blew him off the mountain. This is what he figures happened.
Well, that's one of his favorite expressions.
But yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm writing all.
No, right. I realize it, but you got to put something in the book.
Sure.
But the thing is, just for a minute now, talking about that. The thing that struck me a little peculiar was that here's two guys roped together. You know, if they were all traveling together, you'd think they'd be hooked together.
No, not necessarily. You can be all together on the